Well, here's what he does. This is why we're so worried. Look at those wounds. She turned back. In the growing morning light, she could see something she'd missed before. The skin directly around the sword wounds had been completely drained of color. The wounds themselves had a dark black tinge to them, as if they had been infected with some terrible disease. She turned back to Denth. "Let's go," Denth said, leading her away from the crowd as the city guards finally began to order people back, annoyed by the number of gawkers. "Who were they?" she asked quietly. Denth stared straight ahead. "A gang of thieves, ones we'd worked with."
"You think he might come for us?"
"I'm not sure," Denth said. "He could probably find us if he wanted. I don't know." Tonk Fa approached across the green as they passed through the Dedenir statues.
"Jules and Claude are on alert," Tonk Fa said. "None of us see him anywhere."
"What happened to the skin of those men?" Vivenna asked.
"It's that sword of his," Denth growled. "We have to find a way to deal with it, Tonks. We're going to end up crossing him eventually. I can feel it."
"But what is the sword?" Vivenna asked. "And how did it drain the color from their skin?"
"We'll have to steal the thing, Denth,"
Tonk Fa said, rubbing his chin as Jules and Claude filled in around them, making a protective pattern as they moved out into the human river of the street. "Steal the sword?" Denth asked. "I'm not touching the thing." "No, we have to make him use it. Draw it. He won't be able to keep it out for long. After that, we'll be able to take him easily. I'll kill him myself."
"He beat Arsteel," Jules said quietly.
Denth froze. "He did not beat Arsteel. Not in a duel, at least."
"Vasher didn't use the sword," Jules said. "There was no blackness to Arsteel's wounds."
"Then Vasher used a trick," Denth said. "Ambush, accomplices, something. Vasher is no duelist."
Vivenna let herself get pulled along, thinking of those bodies. Denth and the others had spoken of the deaths this Vasher was causing. She'd wanted to see them. Well, now she had, and it left her feeling disturbed, unsettled, and... she frowned, itching slightly. Someone with a lot of breath was watching her.
"Hey," Nightblood said, "it's Vara Trelides. We should go talk to him. He'll be happy to see me."
Vasher stood openly atop the building. He didn't really care who saw him. He rarely did. An endless flow of people passed on the colorful street. Vara Trelides, Denth, as he called himself now, walked among them with his team. The woman, Jules, Tonk Fa, as always, the clueless princess, and the abomination.
"Is Shashara here?" Nightblood asked, excitement in his nebulous voice. "We need to go see her. She'll be worried about what happened to me."
"We killed Shashara long ago, Nightblood," Vasher said, "just like we killed Arsteel. Just like we'll eventually kill Denth."
As usual, Nightblood refused to acknowledge Shashara's death.
"She made me, you know," Nightblood said. "Made me to destroy things that were evil. I'm rather good at it. I think she'd be proud of me. We should go talk to her, show her how well I do my job."
"You are good at it," Vasher whispered. "Too good."
Nightblood began to hum quietly, pleased at the perceived praise. Vasher, however, focused on the princess, walking in her obviously exotic dress, standing out like a flake of snow in the tropical heat.
He would need to do something about her. Because of her, so many things were falling apart. Plans toppling like badly stacked boxes, creating a racket with their collapse. He didn't know where Denth had found her or how he kept control of her. However, Vasher was sorely tempted to jump down and let Nightblood take her. The deaths the night before had already drawn too much attention. Nightblood was right. Vasher wasn't good at sneaking about. Rumors regarding him were widespread in the city. That was both good and bad. Later, he thought, turning from the silly girl and her mercenary entourage. Later. Chapter 30.
Light song, Blushweaver said, hands on hips. What in the name of the iridescent tones are you doing?
Lightsong ignored her, instead applying his hands to the clump of muddy clay in front of him. His servants and priests stood in a large ring, looking nearly as confused as Blushweaver, who had arrived at his pavilion just a few moments before. The pottery wheel spun. He held the clay, trying to get it to stay in place. Sunlight shone in through the sides of the pavilion, and the neatly manicured grass under his table was flecked with clay. As the wheel sped up, the clay twirled round, flipping out clods and clumps. Lightsong's hands became soaked with grimy, slick clay, and it didn't take long for the entire mess to flip off the wheel and squish to the ground.
"Hmm," he said, regarding it.
"Have you taken leave of your senses?" Blushweaver asked. She wore one of her customary dresses, which meant nothing on the sides, very little at the top, and only slightly more through the front and back. She had her hair up in an intricately twisting woven pattern of braids and ribbon, likely the work of a master stylist who had been invited into the court to perform for one of the gods. Lightsong hopped to his feet, holding his hands out to either side as servants rushed to wash them off. Others came and wiped the bits of clay from his fine robes. He stood thoughtfully as other servants removed the pottery wheel.
"Well?" Blushweaver asked. "What was that?"
"I just discovered that I'm no good at pottery," Lightsong said. "Actually, I am worse than no good. I am pathetic. Ridiculously bad. Can't even get the blasted clay to stay on the wheel."
"Well, what did you expect?"
"I'm not sure," Lightsong said, walking across the pavilion toward a long table. Blushweaver, obviously annoyed at being led along, followed. Lightsong suddenly grabbed 5 lemons off of the table and threw them into the air. He proceeded to juggle them. Blushweaver watched, and for just a moment, she looked honestly concerned.
"Lightsong?" she asked. "Dear, is everything all right?"
"I have never practiced juggling," he said, watching the lemons. "Now, please grab that guava fruit."
She hesitated, then carefully picked up the guava.
"Throw it," Lightsong said.
She tossed it at him. He deftly plucked it from the air, then threw it into the pattern with the lemons.
"I didn't know I could do this," he said. "Not before today. What do you make of it?"
"I..." she cocked her head.
He laughed. "I don't think I've ever seen you at a loss for words, my dear."
"I don't know that I've ever seen another god throwing fruit into the air."
"It's more than this," Lightsong said, dipping down as he nearly lost one of the lemons. "Today I have discovered that I know a surprising number of sailing terms, that I am fantastic at mathematics, and that I have a fairly good eye for sketching. On the other hand, I know nothing about the dyeing industry, horses, or gardening. I have no talent for sculpting, I can't speak any foreign languages, and, as you've seen, I'm terrible at pottery."
Blushweaver watched him for a second. He looked at her,
letting the lemons drop, but snatching the guava out of the air. He tossed it to a servant, who began peeling it for him. "My previous life, Blushweaver. These are skills that I, Lightsong, have no right to know. Whoever I was before I died, he could juggle. He knew about sailing, and he could sketch."
"We're not supposed to worry about the people we were before,"
Blushweaver said. "I'm a god," Lightsong said, taking back a plate containing the peeled and sliced guava, then offering a piece to Blushweaver. "And, by Kalad's phantoms, I'll worry about whatever I please." She paused, then smiled, and took a slice.
"Just when I thought I had you figured out."
"You didn't have me figured out," he said lightly, "and neither did I. That's the point. Shall we go?"
She nodded, joining him as they began to cross the lawn, their servants bringing parasols to shade them.
"You can't tell me that you've never wondered," Lightsong said.
"My dear," she replied, sucking on a guava piece, "I was boring before."
"How do you know?"
"Because I was an ordinary person. I would have been, well, have you seen regular women?"
"Their proportions aren't quite up to your standards, I know," he said. "But many are quite attractive."
Blushweaver shivered. "Please, why would you want to know about your normal life? What if you were a murderer or a rapist? Worse, what if you had bad fashion sense?"
He snorted at the twinkle in her eye. "You act so shallow. But I see the curiosity. You should try some of these things. Let them tell you a little of who you were. There must have been something special about you for you to have returned."
"Hmm,"
she said, smiling and sidling up to him. He stopped as she ran her finger down the front of his chest.
"Well, if you're trying new things today, maybe there's something else you ought to think about."
"Don't try to change the subject."
"I'm not," she said. "But how will you know who you were if you don't try? It would be an experiment."
Lightsong laughed, pushing her hand away. "My dear, I fear you would find me less than satisfactory."
"I think you overestimate me."
"That's impossible." She paused, flushing slightly. "Ah," Lightsong said. "I didn't exactly mean..."
"Oh, bother," she said. "Now you've spoiled the moment. I was about to say something very clever. I just know it."
He smiled. "Both of us. At a loss for words in one afternoon. I do believe we're losing our touch."
"My touch is perfectly fine, which you'd discover if you'd just let me show you."
He rolled his eyes and continued to walk. "You're hopeless."
"When all else fails, use sexual innuendo," she said lightly, joining him.
"It always brings the focus back to where it belongs.
On me."
"Hopeless," he said again. "But I doubt we have time for me to chastise you again. We've arrived."
Indeed, Hopefinder's palace was before them, lavender and silver. It had a pavilion out front prepared with three tables and food.
Naturally, Blushweaver and Lightsong had arranged for the meeting ahead of time. Hopefinder the Just, god of innocence and beauty, stood up as they approached. He appeared to be about 13 years old. By apparent physical age, he was the youngest of the gods in the court. But they weren't supposed to acknowledge these discrepancies. After all, he'd returned when his body had been 2, which made him, in god years, Lightsong's senior by 6 years. In a place where most gods didn't last 20 years, the average age was probably closer to 10. 6 years' difference was very significant.
"Lightsong, Blushweaver," Hopefinder said, stiff and formal. "Welcome."
"Thank you, dear,"
Blushweaver said, smiling at him. Hopefinder nodded, then gestured toward the tables. The three small tables were separate, but set close enough together for the meal to remain intimate, while giving each god his or her own space.
"How have you been, Hopefinder?" Lightsong asked, sitting.
"Very well," Hopefinder said. His voice always seemed a little too mature for his body, like a boy trying to imitate his father. "There was a particularly difficult case during petitions this morning. A mother with a child who was dying of the fevers. She'd already lost her other three, as well as her husband. All in the space of a year. Tragic."
"My dear," Blushweaver said with concern, "you're not actually considering passing your breath, are you?"
Hopefinder sat.
"I don't know, Blushweaver. I am old. I feel old. Perhaps it is time for me to go. I'm fifth most aged, you know."
"Yes, but with the times growing so exciting."
"Exciting?" he asked. "Why, they're calming down. The new queen is here, and my sources in the palace say that she's pursuing her duties to produce an heir with great vigor. Stability will soon arrive."
"Stability?" Blushweaver asked, as the servants brought them each a chilled soup. "Hopefinder, I find it hard to believe that you're so uninformed."
"You think the Idrians plan to use the new queen in a play for the throne," Hopefinder said. "I know what you've been doing, Blushweaver. I disagree."
"And the rumors out in the city?" Blushweaver said. "The Idrian agents who are causing such a ruckus? This so-called second princess somewhere in the city?"
Lightsong paused, spoon halfway to his lips. "What was that?" he thought.
"The city's Idrians are always creating one crisis or another," Hopefinder said, waving his fingers dismissively. "What was that disturbance 6 months ago? The rebel on the Outer Dai plantations. He died in prison, I recall. Foreign workers rarely provide a stable societal underclass, but I don't fear them."
"They've never claimed to have a royal agent working with them," Blushweaver said. "Things could get out of hand very quickly."
"My interests in the city are quite secure," Hopefinder said, lacing his fingers in front of him. The servants took away his soup. He'd taken only three sips. "How about yours?"
"That's what this meeting is for," Blushweaver said.
"Excuse me," Lightsong said, raising a finger. "But what in the colors are we talking about?"
"Unrest in the city, Lightsong," Hopefinder said. "Some of the locals are unsettled by the prospect of war."
"They could turn dangerous very easily," Blushweaver said, stirring her soup with a lazy motion. "I think that we should be prepared."
"I am," Hopefinder said, watching Blushweaver with his too young face.
Like all younger returned, the God King included, Hopefinder would continue to age until his body reached maturity. Then he would stop aging, just over the brink into the prime adulthood, until he gave up his breath. He acted so much like an adult. Lightsong hadn't interacted much with children, but some of his attendants, when training, were youths. Hopefinder wasn't like those. All accounts said that Hopefinder, like other young returned, had matured very quickly during his first year of life, coming to think and speak as an adult while his body was still that of a young child. Hopefinder and Blushweaver continued to talk about the stability of the city, mentioning various acts of vandalism that had occurred. War plans stolen, city supply stations poisoned. Lightsong let them talk.
"He doesn't seem to find Blushweaver's beauty distracting," he thought as he watched.
She turned to the fruit course, acting characteristically lascivious as she sucked on pieces of pineapple. Hopefinder either didn't care or didn't notice, as she leaned forward, showing an impressive amount of cleavage. Something is different about him. Lightsong thought. He returned when he was a child and acted like one for a very short time. Now, he's an adult in some ways, but a child in others. The transformation had made Hopefinder more mature. He was also taller and more physically impressive than ordinary boys his age, even if he didn't have the chiseled, majestic features of a fully grown god. And yet, Lightsong thought, eating a piece of pineapple, different gods have different body styles. Blushweaver is inhumanly well endowed, particularly for how thin she is. Yet Mercy Star is plump and curvaceous all around. Others, like Allmother, look physically old. Lightsong knew he didn't deserve his powerful physique. Like the knowledge of how to juggle, he somehow understood that a person usually had to work hard at manual labor to have such a muscular body. Lounging about, eating and drinking, should have made him plump and flabby. But there have been gods who were fat, he thought, remembering some of the pictures he had seen of returned who had come before him. There was a time in our culture's history when that was seen as the ideal. Did returned looks have something to do with the way society saw them? Perhaps their opinion of ideal beauty? That would certainly explain Blushweaver. Some things survived the transformation. Language, skills, and, as he thought about it, social competence. Considering the fact that the gods spent their lives locked up atop a plateau, they probably should have been far less well-adjusted than they were. At the very least, they should have been ignorant and naive. Yet most of them were consummate schemers, sophisticates with a surprisingly good grasp of what happened in the outside world. Memory itself didn't survive. Why? Why could Lightsong juggle and understand the meaning of the word bowsprit, yet at the same time be unable to remember who his parents had been? And who was that face he saw in his dreams? Why had storms and tempests dominated his dreams lately? What was the red panther that had appeared yet again in his nightmares the night before? Blushweaver, Hopefinder said, holding up a hand, enough. Before we go any further, I must point out that your obvious attempts to seduce me will gain you nothing. Blushweaver glanced away, looking embarrassed. Lightsong shook himself out of his contemplations. My dear Hopefinder, he said, she was not trying to seduce you. You must understand, Blushweaver's aura of allure is simply a part of who she is. It's part of what makes her so charming. Regardless, he said, I will not be swayed by it or by her paranoid arguments and fears. My contacts do not think that these things are simple paranoia, Blushweaver said, as the fruit dishes were removed. A small chilled fish fillet arrived next. Contacts? Hopefinder asked. And just who are these contacts you keep mentioning? People within the God King's palace itself. We all have people in the God King's palace, Hopefinder said. I don't, Lightsong said. Can I have one of yours? Blushweaver rolled her eyes. My contact is quite important. He hears things, knows things. War is coming. I don't believe you, he said, picking at his food. But that doesn't really matter now, does it? You're not here to get me to believe you. You just want my army. Your codes, Blushweaver said. Lifeless security phrases. What will it cost us to get them? Hopefinder picked at his fish some more. Do you know, Blushweaver, why I find my existence so boring? She shook her head. Honestly, I still think you're bluffing on that count. I'm not, he said. 11 years. 11 years of peace. 11 years to grow to sincerely loathe this system of government we have. We all attend the Assembly Court of Judgment.
We listen to the arguments, but most of us don't matter. In any given vote, only those with sway in that field have any real say over anything. During war times, those of us with lifeless commands are important. The rest of the time, our opinion rarely matters. You want my lifeless? Be welcome to them. I have had no opportunity to use them in 11 years. And I venture that another 11 will pass without incident. I will give you those commands, Blushweaver, but only in exchange for your vote. You sit on the Council of Social Ills. You have an important vote practically every week. In exchange for my security phrases, you must promise to vote in social matters as I say, from now until one of us dies. The pavilion fell silent.
Ah, so now you reconsider,
Hopefinder said, smiling.
I've heard you complain about your duties in court, that you find your votes trivial. Well, it's not so easy to let go of them, is it? Your vote is all the influence you have. It isn't flashy, but it is potent.
It done, Blushweaver said sharply. Hopefinder cut off. My vote is yours, Blushweaver said, meeting his eyes. The terms are acceptable. I swear it in front of your priests and mine, before another god even.
By the colors, Lightsong thought, she really is serious.
Part of him had presumed, all along, that her posturing about the war was just another game. Yet the woman who stared Hopefinder in the eyes wasn't playing. She sincerely believed that Hallandrin was in danger, and she wanted to make certain that the armies were unified and prepared. She cared. And that left him worried. What had he gotten himself into? What if there really was a war? As he watched the interaction of the two gods, he was left chilled by how easily and quickly they dealt with the fate of the Hallandrin people. To Hopefinder, his control of a quarter of the Hallandrin armies should have been a sacred obligation. He was ready to toss that aside simply because he had grown bored. Who am I to chastise another's lack of piety? Lightsong thought, I, who don't even believe in my own divinity. And yet, at that moment, as Hopefinder prepared to release his commands to Blushweaver, Lightsong thought he saw something. Like a remembered fragment of a memory. A dream that he might never have dreamed. A shining room, glowing, reflecting light. A room of steel. A prison.
Servants and priests, withdraw, Hopefinder commanded.
They retreated, leaving the three gods alone beside their half-eaten meals, pavilion silk flapping slightly in the wind.
The security phrase,
Hopefinder said, looking at Blushweaver,
is a candle by which to see.
It was the title of a famous poem. Even Lightsong knew it. Blushweaver smiled. Speaking those words to any of Hopefinder's 10,000 lifeless in the barracks would allow her to override their current orders and take complete control of them. Lightsong suspected that by the end of the day she'd make the trip down to the barracks, which lay at the base of the court and were considered part of it, and begin imprinting Hopefinder's soldiers with a new security phrase, known only to her and perhaps a few of her most trusted priests.
And now I withdraw, Hopefinder said, standing. There is a vote this evening at the court. You will attend, Blushweaver, and you will cast your vote in favor of the reformist arguments.
With that, he left.
Why do I feel like we've just been manipulated? Lightsong asked.
We only got manipulated, my dear, if there isn't war. If there is,
Then we may have just set ourselves up to save the entire court, perhaps the kingdom itself.
How very altruistic of us, Lightsong said.
We're like that,
Blushweaver said, as the servants returned.
So selfless, at times it's painful. Either way, that means we control 2 gods' worth of lifeless.
Mine and Hopefinder's?
Actually, she said, I was speaking of Hopefinder's and Mercy Star's. She confided hers to me yesterday, all the while talking about how comforting she found it that you'd taken a personal interest in the incident at her palace. That was very well done, by the way.
She seemed to be fishing for something. Lightsong smiled. No, I didn't know that would encourage her to release her commands to you. I was just curious.
Curious about a murdered servant?
Actually, yes, Lightsong said. The death of a servant of the Returned is quite disconcerting to me, particularly in its proximity to our own palaces. Blushweaver raised an eyebrow. Would I lie to you? Lightsong asked.
Only every time you claim you don't want to sleep with me. Lies. Brazen lies.
Innuendo again, my dear?
Of course not, she said. That was quite blatant. Regardless, I know that you're lying about that investigation. What was the real purpose of it?
Lightsong paused, then sighed, shaking his head, waving for a servant to bring back the fruit. He liked that better. I don't know, Blushweaver. In all honesty, I'm beginning to wonder if I might have been a kind of officer of the law in my previous life. She frowned. You know, like City Watch. I was extremely good at interrogating those servants. At least, that's my own humble opinion.
Which we've already established is quite altruistic.
Quite, he agreed. I think this might explain how I ended up dying in a bold way, giving me my name. Blushweaver raised an eyebrow.
I just always assumed you were found in bed with a much younger woman and her father killed you.
Seems far more bold than dying from stab wounds while trying to catch some petty thief. Your mockery slides right off my altruistic humility.
Ah, indeed.
Either way, Lightsong said, eating another chunk of pineapple, I was a sheriff or investigator of some kind. I'll bet that if I ever got my hands on a sword, I'd prove one of the best duelists this city has ever seen. She regarded him for a moment.
You're serious?
Dead serious. Dead as a squirrel serious. She paused, looking puzzled. Personal joke, he said, sighing. But yes, I believe it. Though there's one thing I can't figure out.
And that is?
How juggling lemons fits into it all. Chapter 31. I feel I have to ask one more time, Denth said. Do we have to go through with this? Denth walked with Vivenna, Tonk Fa, Jules, and Claude. Parlin had stayed behind at Denth's suggestion. He was worried about the dangers of the meeting and didn't want another body to keep track of.
Yes, we have to go through with this, Vivenna said. They're my people, Denth.
So? He asked. Princess, mercenaries are my people, and you don't see me spending that much time with them. They're a smelly, annoying lot.
Not to mention rude,
Tonk Fa added. Vivenna rolled her eyes.
Denth, I'm their princess. Besides, you yourself said that they were influential.
Their leaders are, Denth said, and they'd be perfectly happy to meet with you on neutral ground. Going into the slums isn't necessary. The common people, they really aren't all that important.
She eyed him. That is the difference between Halandrin and Idrians.
We pay attention to our people. Behind, Jules snorted in derision.
I'm not Halandrin, Denth noted. However, he let the statement drop as they approached the slums. Vivenna had to admit that as they grew closer, she did feel a little more apprehensive. This slum felt different from the others, darker somehow. Something more than just the run-down shops and unrepaired streets. Small groups of men stood on street corners, watching her with suspicious eyes. Every once in a while, Vivenna would catch a glimpse of a building with a woman in very revealing clothing, even for Halandrin, hanging about the front. Some even whistled toward Denth and Tonk Fa. This was a foreign place. Everywhere else in Teller, she felt like she didn't fit in. Here, she felt unwelcome, distrusted, even hated. She steeled herself. Somewhere in this place was a group of tired, overworked, frightened Idrians. The threatening atmosphere made her feel even sorrier for her people. She didn't know if they would be much help in trying to sabotage the Halandrin war effort, but she did know one thing. She intended to help them. If her people had slipped through the monarchy's fingers, then it was her duty to try and pick them back up.
That look on your face, Denth said. What's it for?
I'm worried about my people, she said, shivering as they passed a large group of street toughs dressed in black with red armbands, their faces stained and dirtied. I came by this slum when Parlin and I were searching for a new home. I didn't want to get close, even though I'd heard that rents were cheap. I can't believe that my people are so oppressed that they would have to live somewhere in here, surrounded by all of this.
Denth frowned.
Surrounded by it?
Vivenna nodded. Living among prostitutes and gangs, having to walk past such things every day.
Denth started laughing, startling her. Princess, he said, your people don't live among prostitutes and gangs. Your people are the prostitutes and gangs.
Vivenna stopped in the middle of the street.
What?
Denth glanced back at her.
This is the Idrian quarter of the city. These slums are called the Highlands, for color's sake.
Impossible, she snapped.
Very possible, Denth replied. I've seen it in cities across the world. Immigrants gather, make a little enclave. That enclave gets conveniently ignored by the rest of the city. When roads are repaired, other places come first. When guards are sent to patrol, they avoid the foreign sections.
The slum becomes its own little world,
Tonk Fa said, walking up beside her.
Everyone you pass in here is Idrian, Denth said, waving for her to keep walking. There's a reason your kind have a bad reputation in the rest of the city.
Vivenna felt a numb chillness. No, she thought. No, it's not possible. Unfortunately, she soon began to see signs. Symbols of Ostra placed, unobtrusive by intention, in the corners of windowsills or on doorsteps. People in grays and whites. Mementos of the Highlands in the form of shepherd's caps or wool cloaks. And yet, if these people were of Idris, then they'd been completely corrupted. Colors marred their costumes, not to mention the air of danger and hostility they exuded. And how could any Idrian even think of becoming a prostitute?
I don't understand, Denth. We are a peaceful people, a people of mountain villages. We are open, friendly.
That kind doesn't last long in a slum, he said, walking beside her. They change, or they get beaten down.
Vivenna shivered, feeling a stab of anger at Halandrin.
I could have forgiven the Halandrin for making my people poor, but this, they've made thugs and thieves out of caring shepherds and farmers.
They've turned our women into prostitutes, and our children to urchins. She knew she shouldn't let herself get angry, and yet she had to grit her teeth and work very, very hard to keep her hair from bleeding to a smoldering red. The images awoke something within her, something she had consistently avoided thinking about. Halandrin has ruined these people, just as it ruined me by dominating my childhood, by forcing me to honor the obligation to be taken and raped in the name of protecting my country. I hate this city. They were unseemly thoughts. She couldn't afford to hate Halandrin. She had been told that on many occasions. She had trouble lately remembering why. But she succeeded in keeping her hatred and hair under control. A few moments later, Fame joined them and led them the rest of the distance. She had been told they would be meeting in a large park, but Vivenna soon saw that the term park had been used loosely. The plot of land was barren, strewn with garbage, and hemmed in by buildings on all sides. Her group stopped at the edge of this dreary garden and waited as Thame went ahead. People had gathered, as Thame had promised. Most were of the same type she had seen earlier, men wearing dark, ominous colors and cynical expressions, cocky street toughs, women in the garb of prostitutes, some worn-down older people. Vivenna forced a smile, but it felt insincere, even to her. For their benefit, she changed her hair color to yellow, the color of happiness and excitement. The people muttered among themselves. Fame soon returned and waved her forward. "Wait," Vivenna said. "I wanted to talk to the common people before we meet with the leaders." Fame shrugged. "If you wish." Vivenna stepped forward. "People of Idris," she said, "I've come to offer you comfort and hope." The people continued to talk among themselves. Very few seemed to pay any attention to her at all. Vivenna swallowed. "I know that you've had hard lives, but I want to promise you that the king does care for you and wants to support you. I will find a way to bring you home."
"Home?" one of the men said. "Back to the highlands?"
Vivenna nodded. Several people snorted at that comment, and a few trailed away. Vivenna watched them go with concern. "Wait," she said. "Don't you want to hear me? I bring news from your king." The people ignored her.
"Most of them just wanted confirmation that you were who you were rumored to be, Your Highness,"
Fame said quietly. Vivenna turned back toward the groups, still talking quietly in the garden. "Your lives can get better," she promised. "I will see you cared for."
"Our lives are already better," one of the men said. "There is nothing for us in the highlands. I earn twice as much here as I did back there."
Others nodded in agreement.
"Then why even come to see me?" she whispered.
"I told you, princess," Thame said. "They're patriots. They cling to being Idrian. City Idrians. We stick together, we do. You being here, it means something to them, don't worry. They may seem indifferent, but they'll do anything to get back at the Halandrin."
"Ostra, Lord of Colors," she thought, growing even more deeply upset. "These people aren't even Idrians anymore. Fame called them patriots, but all she saw was a group held together by the eternal pressures of Halandrin disdain." She turned, giving up on her speech. These people weren't interested in hope or comfort. They only wanted revenge. She could use that, perhaps, but it made her feel dirty even to consider it. Thame led her and the others down a pathway beaten into the ugly field of weeds and trash. Near the far side of the park,
They found a wide structure that was partially a storage shed, partially an open wooden pavilion. She could see the leaders waiting inside. There were three of them, each with his own complement of bodyguards. She had been told of them ahead of time. The leaders wore rich, vibrant, Teteller colors. Slumlords. Vivenna felt her stomach twist. All three of the men had at least the first heightening. One of them had attained the third. Jules and Claude took their places outside the building, guarding Vivenna's escape route. Vivenna walked in and sat in the last open chair. Denth and Tonk Fa took up protective places behind her. Vivenna regarded the slumlords. All three were variations on the same theme. The one on the left looked most comfortable in his rich clothing. That would be Paxson, the gentleman Idrian, he was called. He'd gotten his money from running brothels. The one on the right looked like he needed a haircut to match his fine garments. That would be Ashu, who was known for running and funding underground fighting leagues, where men could watch Idrians box each other to unconsciousness. The one in the center seemed the self-indulgent type. He was sloppy, but in a purposefully relaxed way, perhaps because it was a nice accent to his handsome, youthful face. Rira, Thames' employer. She reminded herself not to put too much stock in any facile interpretation of their appearances. These were dangerous men. The room was silent. "I'm not sure what to say to you," Vivenna said finally. "I came to find something that doesn't exist. I was hoping that the people still cared about their heritage." Rira leaned forward, sloppy clothing out of place compared with the clothing of the others in the room.
"You're our princess," he said, "daughter of our king. We care about that."
"Kind of," said Paxson.
"Really, princess," Rira said, "we're honored to meet with you, and curious at your intentions in our city. You've been making quite a stir."
Vivenna regarded them with a serious expression. Finally, she sighed. "You all know that war is coming." Rira nodded. Ashu, however, shook his head.
"I'm not convinced there will be war. Not yet."
"It is coming," Vivenna said sharply. "I promise you that. My intentions in this city, therefore, are to make certain that the war goes as well for Idris as possible."
"And what would that entail?"
Ashu asked.
"A royal on the throne of Halandrin?"
Was that what she wanted? "I just want our people to survive."
"A weak middle ground," said Paxson, polishing the top of his fine cane. "Wars are fought to be won, Your Highness. The Halandrin have lifeless. Beat them, and they'll just make more. I think that an Idrian military presence in the city would be an absolute necessity if you wanted to bring our homeland freedom."
Vivenna frowned.
"You think to overthrow the city?" asked Ashu. "If you do, what do we get out of it?"
"Wait," said Paxson. "Overthrow the city? Are you sure we want to get involved in that sort of thing again? What of Var's failure? We all lost a lot of money in that venture."
"Var was from Pankal," said Ashu. "Not one of us at all. I'm willing to take another risk if there are real royals involved this time."
"I didn't say anything about overthrowing the kingdom," Vivenna said. "I just want to bring the people some hope." Or at least I did, she thought.
"Hope?" asked Paxson. "Who cares about hope? I want commitments. Will titles be handed out? Who gets the trade contracts if Idris wins?"
"You have a sister," Rira said. "A third one, unmarried. Is her hand bargainable? Royal blood could gain my support for your war."
Vivenna's stomach twisted. "Gentlemen," she said in her diplomat's voice, "this is not about seeking personal gain.
This is about patriotism.
Of course, of course, Rira said. But even patriots should earn rewards, right?
All three looked at her expectantly. Vivenna stood up. I will be going now.
Denth, looking surprised, laid a hand on her shoulder. Are you sure? He asked. It took quite a bit of effort to set up this meeting.
I have been willing to work with thugs and thieves, Denth, she said quietly. But seeing these and knowing they're my own people is too hard.
You judge us quickly, princess,
Rira said from behind, chuckling.
Don't tell me that you didn't expect this.
Expecting something is different from seeing it firsthand, Rira. I expected you three. I didn't expect to see what had happened to our people.
And the five visions? Rira asked. You sweep in here, judge us beneath you, then sweep away? That's not very Idrian of you.
She turned back toward the men. The long-haired Ashu had already stood and was gathering his bodyguards to go, grumbling about the waste of time. What do you know of being Idrian? She snapped. Where is your obedience to Ostra? Rira reached beneath his shirt, pulling out a small white disc inscribed with his parents' names. An Ostran charm of obedience.
My father carried me down here from the highlands, princess. He died working the Edgley fields. I've pulled myself up by the pain of my scraped, bleeding hands. I worked very hard to make things better for your people. When Var spoke of revolution, I gave him coin to feed his supporters.
You buy breath, she said, and you make prostitutes of housewives.
I live, he said, and I make sure that everyone else has enough food. Will you do better for them?
Vivenna frowned. She fell silent as she heard the screams. Her life sense jolted her, warning of large groups of people approaching. She spun as the slumlords cursed, standing. Outside, through the garden, she saw something terrible. Purple and yellow uniforms on hulking men with gray faces. Lifeless soldiers. The city watch. Peasants scattered, screaming as the lifeless tromped into the garden, led by a number of uniformed living city guards. Denth cursed, shoving Vivenna to the side.
Run,
he said, whipping his sword free. But Tong Fa grabbed her arm, towing her out of the building as Denth charged the guards. The slumlords and their people were in disarray as they fled, though the city guards were quickly moving to cut off the exits. Tong Fa cursed, pulling Vivenna into a small alleyway across from the garden. What's going on? She asked, heart thumping.
Raid, Tong Fa said. Shouldn't be too dangerous unless...
Blades sounded, metal clashing against metal, and the screams grew more desperate. Vivenna glanced backward. The men from the slumlords' groups, feeling trapped, had engaged the lifeless. Vivenna felt a sense of horror, watching the terrible gray-faced men wade among the swords and daggers, ignoring wounds. The creatures pulled out their weapons and began to attack. Men yelled and screamed, falling, bloody. Denth moved to defend the mouth of Vivenna's alleyway. She didn't know where Jules had gone.
Kalad's phantoms, Tong Fa cursed, pushing her ahead of him as they retreated.
Those fools decided to resist. Now we're in trouble.
But how did they find us?
Don't know,
he said.
Don't care. They might be after you. They might just be after those slumlords. I hope we never find out. Keep moving.
Vivenna obeyed, rushing down the dark alleyway, trying to keep from tripping on her long dress. It proved very impractical to run in, and Tong Fa kept shooing her forward, looking back anxiously. She heard grunts and echoing yells as Denth fought something at the mouth of the alleyway. Vivenna and Tong Fa burst out of the alleyway. There, standing in the street waiting, was a group of five lifeless. Vivenna lurched to a halt. Tong Fa cursed. The lifeless looked as if they were stone,
their expressions eerily grim in the waning light. Tongfa glanced backward, obviously deciding that Denth wasn't going to be arriving anytime soon, then resignedly held his hands up and dropped his sword.
I can't take five on my own, Princess,
he whispered.
Not lifeless. We'll have to let them arrest us.
Vivenna slowly held her hands up as well. The lifeless pulled out their weapons.
Tongfa said, we surrender?
The creatures charged.
Run,
he shouted, reaching down and snatching his sword off the ground. Vivenna stumbled to the side as several of the lifeless charged Tongfa. She scrambled away as quickly as she could. Tongfa tried to follow, but had to stop to defend himself. She slowed, glancing back in time to see him ram his dueling blade through the neck of a lifeless. The creature gushed something that wasn't blood. Three others got around Tongfa, though he did manage to whip his blade to the side, taking one in the back of the leg. It fell to the cobbles. Two ran toward her. Vivenna watched them come, mind numb. Should she stay? Try to help? Help how? Something screamed within her. That something was visceral and primal. Run! And she did. She dashed away, overwhelmed with terror, taking the first corner she saw, ducking into an alleyway. She raced for the other end, but in her haste, she tripped on her skirt. She hit the cobblestones roughly, crying out. She heard footsteps behind her and yelled for help, ignoring her bruised elbow as she quickly tore her skirt off, leaving only her underbreeches. She scrambled to her feet, screaming again. Something darkened the other end of the alleyway, a hulking figure with gray skin. Vivenna stopped, then spun. The other two entered the alleyway behind her. She backed against the wall, feeling suddenly cold, shocked.
Astra, God of Colors, she thought, trembling. Please.
The three lifeless advanced on her, weapons drawn. She looked down. A bit of rope, frayed but still useful, sat in the refuse beside her discarded green skirt. Like everything else, the rope called to her, as if it knew that it could live again. She couldn't sense the lifeless bearing down on her, but ironically, she felt as if she could sense the rope. Could imagine it, twisting around legs, tying the creatures up.
Those breaths you hold, Denth had said, they're a tool, almost priceless. Certainly powerful.
She glanced back at the lifeless, with their inhumanly human eyes. She felt her heart thumping so hard it felt like someone was pounding on her chest. She watched them approach and saw her death reflected in their unfeeling eyes. Tears on her face, she fell to her knees, trembling as she grabbed the rope. She knew the mechanics. Her tutors had trained her. She'd need to touch the fallen skirt to drain color out of it.
Come to life, she begged the rope.
Nothing happened. She knew the mechanics, but that obviously wasn't enough. She wept, eyes blurry.
Please, she begged. Please, save me.
The first lifeless reached her, the one who had cut her off at the far end of the alleyway. She cringed, cowering, to the dirty street. The creature leaped over her. She looked up in shock as the creature slammed its weapon into one of the others as they arrived. Vivenna blinked her eyes clear, and only then did she recognize the newcomer. Not Denth, not Tongfa, a creature with skin as gray as that of the men attacking her, which was why she hadn't recognized him at first. Claude. He expertly took off the head of his first opponent, wielding his thick-bladed sword. Something clear sprayed from the neck of the beheaded creature as it fell backward, tumbling to the ground. Dead, apparently, as any man would have been. Claude blocked an attack from the remaining lifeless guard. Behind, in the mouth of the alleyway, two more appeared. They charged as Claude backed up, firmly planting one foot on either side of Vivenna. His sword held before him. It dripped clear liquid. The remaining lifeless guard waited for the other two to approach. Vivenna trembled, too tired, too numb,
to flee. She glanced upward and saw something almost human in Claude's eyes as he raised his sword against the three. It was the first